Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road a couple of times this week. Quite frankly, when I was putting it together in conjunction with our partners at the Maryland Lottery, our partners at Goodwill, Window Nation, I got my Window Nation 2 for 2 going on all month. I thought we'd be talking about the World Cup. I thought we'd be talking about something really, really awesome for our city that ties my sports jam to the business jam, to the world travel peace thing, to the soccer peace thing, to the how Baltimore and Washington can kumbaya and move forward in ways not called Masson or the Angelos versus Lerner trials. Marty Conway joins us now. Marty, I have the mayor at Next Phase Cafe. I'll shave before we get to Brandon Scott. I'm at Fadley's on Wednesday. I thought I'd move some shows into the city this week. Not just because you were sort of, you know, positive about it. I was positive. Most people believed that they were not going to turn down Washington, D.C. to be a part of the 2026 World Cup. So as I stood in shock at the Abbey Burger Bistro on Thursday and shocked at everything in the aftermath, you are my first public conversation on this. I'm going to continue to, you know, a lot of people are reaching to me and saying what really happened. The transportation thing's bullshit. I mean, I'll start with that. But Marty, welcome in. Let's have at it, because you and I have been at this a long, long time. Yeah. This was as important a thing, you know, this side of stealing a franchise, as anything that would happen around here. And that one McCartney night, since we've gotten together the last time, and we'll get to the Angelos boys and all that, but it shows that people will come to the city. I mean, all this Fox 45 and nonsense, people will come to the city for a Ravens Chiefs game or a Garth Brooks concert. They will.
Yeah. I mean, I last time we talked, it was based on a lot of things. First of all, originally, the Baltimore Washington bids were separate. And out of 16/17 cities at that point, you would have said, maybe Baltimore doesn't fare as well, especially if Washington's bid is strong, for a lot of reasons. Well, it turned out that bid, the technical specs were not good. The stadium was not good. It was going to fail. And so the two sides were gently nudged together by the organizers, feeling like they had a better opportunity if they came together. So now, based on that, and the fact that originally out of the 16 potential cities, 3 would be in Mexico, 3 would be in Canada, and the other 10 would be in the United States. Well, then when we learned earlier in the week that only Toronto and Vancouver were going to be selected in Canada, that meant that now there was going to be 11 U.S. cities likely selected. That meant that the cut line got lower, and I think that would even, in most people's eyes, improve the chances of a Baltimore getting in, given the strength of their bid. Obviously, in the days then leading up to that, things began to change. I think as people learned in their communication that maybe they weren't going to make it, there were some arms twisted influence. And so here's what we learn about this. We relearn about this for those of us that follow it. What organizations like FIFA or the IOC or other major global governing bodies, they work on power and influence. Money is at the center of it, but it's about power and influence and relationships. And I think at the 11th hour, that is what pushed, perhaps in this case, Boston's bid over the line, given that for many reasons, it's not as good a bid, but Robert Kraft and his son Jonathan are highly connected with Major League Soccer. They are original investors in the league. They're highly engaged with U.S. soccer. And I think it's right to think that perhaps that bid moved up and came at the expense of the Baltimore-Washington bid being successful.
You know, it's amazing, Marty, as this happens, right? You put it out in real time. It happens at 6:00 on Thursday night. And the amount of imbeciles who will jump in and talk about crime in the city or blaming on one side of a political sphere or another. I keep coming back to the fact that FIFA would put games anywhere. They put games in Johannesburg, right? They, if it's about transportation, which is complete bunk, they would never pick Foxborough. Anybody that's been there knows that. They wouldn't be in LA if it was about public transportation. They wouldn't be in Arlington if it was about public transportation. I've been to all of Miami. Nobody goes to Miami Gardens on a train, not even for a Def Leppard, Poison, and Motley Crue crew. Like the other day, my friends went down there for that. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that there's a lot of false flags and let's blame it on Larry Hogan because we don't have a red line. Well, we don't have a red line. Blame that on Larry Hogan. That's how he got elected, by the way. And he sat next to me on the Crab Cake Tour last year and told me that. But it has nothing to do with the red line not getting – this really had to do with the last 6 or 8 weeks. And getting to the finish line was something better than maybe you had 6 months ago. And I don't mean bribe, although it is FIFA. Who knows? But whatever it is – that where's Bisciotti? Where's Cal Ripken? Where's Michael Phelps? Where's the Washington people? Where's Larry Hogan? Where were the leaders to say this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to do something spectacular, linking Baltimore and Washington together in some way that Maglev is trying to and other people are trying to for their own economic benefit? This would be for a flag in the sand to say, we're a world place. We're a place in the world you want to come. Washington, D.C., Baltimore, the Chesapeake Bay region, Ocean City, Maryland, our mountains, our area, all our history, our stars, all of these things that our poverty, our wire reputation, coming and fixing all that BS that FIFA talks about leaving behind a legacy of sport in the world, that they talk about doing and they don't. But in this particular case, Baltimore as a negative because of crime or transportation or any of that, it had nothing to do with that. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with how much money and what a good play this would have been against Philadelphia or Boston or Atlanta or Kansas City or any other play. And what happened here in the last 8 weeks to take a world-class stadium in a city on a train line? Talk about the train line. The train line comes in the only place that mattered, Washington, literally, and Philadelphia. Literally, you can get to the front door of the stadium on a train. So or a car or a boat, for crying out loud, or a helicopter with an airport 10 minutes away. So I don't buy any of that. I buy the, well, you guys were given a chance to go bid. Now go bid. Go win the bid. Yeah. Put Baltimore and Washington and make it one bid, one great bid, and win. And apparently that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, again, you go back to this. You're not getting FIFA-level events, Men's World Cup, Women's World Cup, whatever it is. You're not getting it without a technically superior facility, number one. They're not putting matches in facilities that are not met. That's why so many other countries are building facilities to FIFA specs so that they can have these events. FIFA has awarded World Cups, as I can tell you firsthand, to countries that had one stadium at the time they were awarded with the promise that they would build 6 or 7 additional stadiums, right? So that's number one part of it. The second part is, how much money can each of these communities generate for FIFA, who are looking to generate somewhere between $5 and $6 billion from each 4-year World Cup cycle that comes about? Now, what is that? Look, tickets are not an issue. Again, there will be some speculation that in a 48-team World Cup, which is what 2026 will be, with 60 matches in the United States out of the 80, that there'd be some question about, well, what about if El Salvador is playing Ghana in Baltimore? Will that sell 65,000 seats?
Yes.
Yeah, of course it will. Like I said, there'll be some question, but that's not the primary motivator. Tickets, I believe, will sell. The question is, what about the rest of the corporate support writ large in every community? So when communities come together and bid, they're pushing forward technical specs. They're pushing forward transportation, hospitality, a number of other things. But there's also and implication as to how much community support there will be for a World Cup sponsorship.
In other words, is Hopkins in, Black & Decker in, Under Armour in?
Yeah.
Are they in? Is Northrop Grumman in? Is McCormick in?
What I call those is pledges, right? Are they making pledges so that literally FIFA and their organizations can count that money 4 years in advance to know that there will be?
Well, Philadelphia had that, right? I mean, of all the places, Philadelphia had that.
Keep in mind, Philadelphia is also at that time running the 250th anniversary celebration of the United States. They have been on a mission for years. They have the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I think they have the NBA All-Star Game. They want to have every major sport All-Star Game in their city that year. And now here comes the World Cup as a part of it. They were not to be denied in that regard. In fact, their marketing scheme talks about the first nation's capital being in Philadelphia. So there's something to that. So again, it's a bit of blood sport here down at the end, because your package measures up. You've had a good tour. FIFA's come through. They like what you see. But then comes this cut line. And again, I think we can...
It is competitive. You have to compete, right?
And in the debrief, I think it will be fair to look at what happened between the time when the bids came together in Baltimore, Washington, and the bid was awarded, right? Did that enhance the opportunity, as most people thought that it would intuitively? Or did it really not enhance? And so as a result, it just sort of, there was some doubt cast about whether, you know, like who's in charge and what happens and that sort of thing. And again, you're spot on that if you look at either Baltimore or Washington standalone, but certainly together, and then you look at Foxborough, where the location is, it's an hour from Boston. Frankly, it's closer to Providence, Rhode Island than it is to Boston. So you're frankly awarding the games to Providence, Rhode Island, as opposed to Boston. But again, look at the influence, look at the role. Again, we go back to the fact that every city that was awarded a World Cup host has either an MLS team, in the case of the United States and Canada, or is a major soccer power in the three cities that were selected in Mexico. Baltimore, of all of those cities, Nestor, every one of those cities that were remaining was the only one that didn't have that. Can that be overcome? Yes. Is it difficult to overcome? Absolutely. Now, having said that, in the debrief,
but there goes your legacy, right? Your legacy thing is, hey, maybe we add a real city in a struggling American place that we bring in with Washington, and we speak to poverty and crime and issues and the environment and the Bay and the most unique tributary in the world, quite frankly. Listen, I don't believe any of that FIFA, you know, whatever their little message is bupkis any more than I believe the NFL when they're, you know, after Colin Kaepernick, that they're really down with any of these social issues, right? I don't believe that, but they do lead with that, and it gives them good BS to put on their PR sheet, right? So that they could have had that. The other part of this is they denied the capital of the free world, the capital of North America, the capital of the country, games. Is there any embarrassment there? Or once DC wasn't getting the games anyway, they're like, well, why do we care? I mean, I can't believe there wasn't enough care for the people that have put their lives. Terry, and again, Terry's running for me. I was at the press conference. I spent 4 hours Thursday night. I had a show booked around explaining all of this from the inside, and people aren't talking. And that really leads... Man, that gets my journalist up as to say what really happened here. Transportation, my ass. I'm not buying any of that. This was a lack of leadership to get this thing done at the finish line when you didn't have a handicap of we're just Baltimore or we have FedEx Field. You had a strength that if you had a real leader, you could put this thing together, smooth this thing out. Uberoth this thing through somehow, and we get World Cup games here, and it changes things here. Probably gets the maglev done. Probably gets a lot of things done around here.
Yeah, and so here's what happens now. The cities that were selected all go to, I believe it's New York for 4 days. I believe they're there now. For 4 days of overview, debrief with the FIFA organization to try to really now look at schedules, to really look in depth at areas now that they know where they're going, and to iron out any air pockets that were in those. They have said that they will come back to the other five or so cities later this summer, July, August, and give them some related feedback on where their bid. If people don't already know, they'll give them more feedback on where they think their bid. Baltimore, Washington will be the most interesting of all those. Orlando was bidding without a NFL stadium, so that was never going to have a chance. Denver was out there, Nashville, Cincinnati, all those have MLS teams, but didn't get it. A lot of those had stadium issues or
is other Denver disappointed things. In all of this? I was a little playing at altitudes, yeah. Also an issue, there's a little bit of that too.
Yeah, no. So again, in the Denver thing, I think it came down to, frankly, Denver or Kansas City, one or the other. And I do believe, honestly, Kansas City with the Lamar Hunt, the Hunt family goes all the way back in the original owners of MLS. They own several teams at one time.
By the way, Kansas City also has that incredible train support out to the edge of the freeway to nowhere land into a parking lot full of nothingness. As people say transportation, I'm like, you're way off the plot if you think transportation's an issue when they gave it to Kansas City and Foxborough.
So Kansas City has rallied really well. They have two soccer teams, men's and a women's NWSL team. So they've got soccer heritage. They're really getting it done out there. So I think Baltimore, Washington debrief will be probably the most important one because, as I've said, I think they came first runner up. I think it's one of those things where it's like in Miss USA, if one of these cities can't perform, Baltimore and Washington would be ready to step up. And I think they will examine the leadership. And here's why it's important, Nestor, because there are going to be some other opportunities. Look, Washington is going to be able to move on just fine. I believe one of the things that Washington will get as a consolation prize, I don't know this for a fact, but if I had my nose to the ground, they will get the MLS All-Star Game next year. So next summer, there'll be a major soccer event, there. So the question will be, going forward, what's it going to take to get the Major League Baseball All-Star Game or to get other things? What was missing from the bid? Was it leadership? Was it technical areas? Was it money? What were those components that will be important to know? Not that I think Baltimore and Washington, frankly, they will ever bid together on something. That's just not something that the Washington leadership in events and other areas is interested in doing. Now, are they struggling, frankly? Because if the Commanders build a football stadium in Virginia, then the Washington, D.C. sort of events D.C. organization is left with nothing from the standpoint of quality major football soccer facilities to draw those. They have Audi Field, which has 23,000 seats, and they would have nothing else. So going forward, they have to be careful about trying to go it alone. So, but it would be important for Baltimore to know what areas were not necessarily approval level, because there's going to be opportunities to get some other things. The Gold Cup will come along for soccer every so often, and maybe other soccer-related events for which M&T Stadium is a perfect venue for all the reasons we've talked about for months.
Marty, why do we believe? I feel like if I put a picture up of Baltimore Positive, and when I finally write about this at some point, I think I will, because it feels to me like something I need to get out of me, because I'm trying to understand it as a reporter, as a fan, as somebody that believed that, like the Doobie Brothers song, What a Fool Believes, right? Like I believed because I just thought, how can you F this up? You're Washington, you're Baltimore. This is the first time we get to go kumbaya. I believed it just smelled right. It's to me, it just smelled like the right time, the right opportunity, mm-hmm. the need, right? That DC needed Baltimore so they would play nice and Baltimore would be Baltimore, which is, if I'm on the committee and I'm Terry, I'm happy to be at the party. What can I do to make this happen? I want to win, even if it's a half win. You get 51% of the pie. I'll take 49%. We need to win because we can't sit here on June 20th and not have a World Cup. Like, that's unacceptable. It should be unacceptable to all of them. It really should be.
Yeah. No, it's important. And you should have felt positive. And I think many people felt very positive. Everything that was being indicated their way was that, you know, the bid was solid, was in order, was, again, had already survived one cut when they took 30 cities down to 16 American cities or whatever it was. And so they were trending in the right direction and had lots of positive things about it. Again, come back to this. Was there enough money? Was the intimation that there was enough money? One of the things that the Kraft family can do, clearly they have a deficit with, you know, there's nothing around the stadium. We know Foxborough is frankly a made up community just so that there could be a football stadium there. But what they can do is they can rally the CEOs in Boston and Providence and places like that to make it clear that they will be there when these packages become available. And not only will they bid for something local, but they will bid on a United States countrywide corporate sponsorship bid when those become available shortly after this World Cup is played. So
is Washington short on money in that way? I mean, is it stretched thin with Leonesis and Wizards and this and Nationals and like what used to be the Commanders? I mean, where did all that money go?
Yeah, no, there's plenty there. Look, Washington, D.C. and the surrounding area has become the U.S. hub for hospitality. Hilton is headquartered there. Marriott is headquartered there. Choice Hotels is headquartered there. There are several major hotel chains that have now chosen Washington. Obviously, we know it's a defense industry headquarters. There is Capital One financially. So there's plenty there. I just don't know what was activated in that process. And again, whether once Washington became non-game day, but something else, whether that wasn't activated. Again, this will be questions for the leadership of not only Baltimore, but certainly DC, is to know what happened. Because going back to 1930, when the first World Cup was played, there's only been two World Cups, one in Germany and the shared bid between Japan and Korea, where a capital city wasn't selected. Tokyo was not selected. They played games around Tokyo, but Seoul was considered the capital there. So there's only been twice in almost 100 years. This will be the third time where a capital city of a host country does not have actual games. So that, you know, there'll be some explaining there. There should rightly be some explaining. But again, as I said, looking forward, how does that loss, how does that setback create a comeback for whatever other opportunities? Because they will be out there hosting qualification matches for World Cups in the qualifiers in the future, all those different things, they'll be out there. So hopefully the bid process doesn't end there, but it leads to something that can be good for soccer in this area, whether it's ultimately to bring a USL franchise, partner with somebody in DC to bring a USL franchise to Baltimore, or something along that lines.
Marty Conway is our guest. He's the good professor at Georgetown University. You can follow him out on Twitter and on LinkedIn. Wise folks do, and we do. Listen, we could go hours just on this World Cup thing. You and I have talked about it at length. I will continue to talk about it and research it, so stay tuned for more. But I would turn this back to you and your Orioleness in the 1980s of recruiting D.C. You know, my father always thought of D.C. as this little place that couldn't support the Senators twice, right? And that Baltimore was the big city and New York was the only place bigger than us. And we were better than them sometimes. So this is my as a child, you're working for the Orioles in the 80s, getting all of this enthusiasm together for Camden Yards and provincial sports that begat me and WNST and eventually the Ravens, right? Playing this the other way, somebody said to me a couple weeks ago, no offense, but FIFA thinks of Baltimore as a Washington neighborhood. Just as, you know, like there'd be no problem calling it the Washington bid and the games are played in Baltimore and having Baltimore sit somehow in the back seat or the rumble seat or whatever. And that would be probably appropriate, but these two communities and as they relate to selling things together, never been a problem getting me to a concert at the Capitol Center, and I became a Caps fan. You know, the Bullets, I always rooted for the Bullets in the 70s with the Big E and Wes and all of that, but certainly over the last 20 years, those franchises don't identify as much as they do showing up on your cable TV package, right? And the Orioles and the Nationals, and I guess this is the segue to this, because now the Nationals are getting held up. This Masson thing has been a disaster for everybody other than the Angelos family, and they have all the money. We have no idea what's going on. And then I'm sitting on a plane to fly to Europe, and a 44-page document drops on me in the holding tank that I'm reading over the Atlantic as almost like, oh my God, did I eat the wrong jelly beans? You know what I mean? Like, I can't believe the dirty laundry in that document. Everything I've ever known and reported, everything you've ever known and not reported, everything that everybody's ever known now out in the middle of this. And it's going to affect both of these cities and their baseball franchises and a bunch of stuff over the next couple of years. This is since the last time you and I've gotten together, and you and I've given a lot of breath to John and Lou and Peter Angelos and Mama and what the future's going to be. I mean, it's your legacy and what you built here in your youth with baseball. This is maybe some could say predictable, but I don't know, man. This is beyond what I would have thought possible, because the old man would not have wanted this.
And I would say almost predictably, all you have to do is go back and look at, there's enough NFL. Look at Denver. Here's an example. We just came through that. We have a sale. Look what's going on in with the Chargers, but everybody's still alive there.
New Orleans was a mess. The Saints, right?
Yeah. So I was going to say New Orleans is a part of that. Keep in mind, this is difficult to say, difficult to express, but that is selling, having, once the primary owner falls into a health situation where they're incapacitated, pass away, whatever it is, they lose control. It just happens. I mean, if you look at the number of times that it's happened, it's almost predictable. Rarely does it go in an orderly way because there's so much money. And so having said that, was there an opportunity to, I know from a tax perspective, it is much more beneficial to sell the team after one passes because of the step up, provisions versus a capital gains provision. I totally get that. But when you sell something while you're alive, you can look across the table and know who you're selling it to and why and all of that. And so when you talk about orderly transition of a franchise, one of the obligations that you have when you buy a professional sports team, Edward Bennett Williams used to say this religiously, and that is, it's a public trust. It's like owning an electric company or something. Like, you don't really own it, because everybody involved is a stakeholder in that process.
By the way, Marty, I haven't heard anybody say that term in a decade. And I thought about that the other day. I thought civic trust is what I would say. Yeah. But it's the first time on my show, probably in the modern era, any guest of mine has spoken about franchises as being anything other than owned by Stephen J. Bisciotti or Peter G. Angelos, and that's that. And not even the Wrigley people owning the Cubs, right? Like, there's a dude that I see at the pool every year in the NFL that is the dude. Now, there are a few women too now, but by and large, it's Mr. Big. And that's a very difficult concept, I think, for a lot of people in America to really appreciate Mr. Big.
Because they award these franchises to communities, obviously with an owner, but the expectation is that franchise belongs in that community and it gets handed over from time to time. That the reason why you buy a team, quite frankly, you're a sportsman, you want to see the community grow and all that. But from a financial standpoint, a reason to buy a professional sports team, generally is the asset sale at the end. That's where you make your money. Will you make some operating income along the way? Sure. Will that change your life? Probably not. When you sell it, will that change your life and generational money? Absolutely. So if there's another lesson here, and that is whether it was 2016, 2017, hey, the team's going to go through a rebuild. It's pretty obvious what's going to happen here. Maybe it's better for another family or another particular person to manage that process, and we'll go from there. Now what you have is you have this cavalcade of, obviously, Peter fell into sometime, I'm told, between the end of October, which we saw in that lawsuit, and I'm told by April of 2018, his condition had deteriorated to the point where he was no longer able to participate in any decisions. And so at that point, you had the Masson thing well underway. It was five or more years already underway in the courts. And so you were heading for this tsunami of, now the Nationals want to sell the owners, the Learners want to sell their team. You have the Masson lawsuit. You have the issues of the Angelos family. You have two franchises entangled that it's just going to take millions of dollars, frankly, in legal fees to untangle them so that they can be sold, either in the case of Washington or Baltimore. And then what happens to the asset that we know as two networks, two channels on a network called Masson? As we look ahead to the mid and late 2020s, that's all going to change. We're going to have new ownership in Washington anytime now. I think it's more than likely we'll have new ownership in this decade in Baltimore. And then Masson becomes a relic of the past as a way to funnel money to the Orioles ownership for Major League Baseball, bringing their team that they owned from Montreal into Washington in 2005.
Marty, you've tried to untangle all of this, but then you say something like, I think we'll have new ownership with the Orioles. Will we? I mean, and listen, I'm not a guy that thinks they can just pick the franchise up and move it to Nashville. You've jumped on the table saying that won't happen. A lot of people have said that won't happen. But this goes back to our FIFA conversation, which is, where's the money that's going to come in that's going to support the Orioles? And that's at the heart of all of my concerns, is that whoever owns it, whoever runs it, has to front face the community, almost like Kenny Cooper did 30 years ago, yeah, and literally recruit business owners, regular people, former Oriole fans, baseball fans, to come back, give money, give support, come downtown, all of those issues. I'm not convinced that the Major League Baseball owners wouldn't give Baltimore away and just say, hey, man, the stadium's nice and stuff. We'll come back whenever we come back, because there ain't no money there, in the same way they would feel that way about Oakland or Montreal or Tampa or any of the other places that they could or would abandon. I mean, they were trying to abandon Minnesota, back in the day with contraction, right? So there's all of that. I don't know who the current Major League Baseball owner, where their heart would be in regard to voting for old buddy, to keep the team in Baltimore for Jerry Hofberger because they liked EBW. Man, I'm going, 2030 here and thinking, what do the Lords of Baseball want when all of this is over with? And I've always thought, why don't they want better people here? I always thought, especially with the old man being four and a half years checked out now, how long are they going to allow this thing to be driven into the gutter? It doesn't feel like it's top of mind for anybody in Major League Baseball to worry about the Orioles, Camden Yards, the franchise, the Angelos boys. They'll let them sort that out. I don't think they want any part of this. And it feels to me like that 44 pages, this could go on a couple of good years, right? I mean, mom might pass in the way too here, right? So this isn't going to get solved quickly between the boys.
Right, right. Once you get into lawsuits, and particularly civil lawsuits, criminal lawsuits at least have to move along by statute, speedy trial and all that. Civil lawsuits don't. They can go for years, and in many cases they do. We've seen that with Masson, right, to do it. I would say this. Look, to me, talking about moving the Orioles to any place, it's just not even a start of a conversation, and here's why. There are so many other issues in baseball, including Tampa and Oakland, that they've got to settle first. And you can see all the focus that Rob Manfred recently has been putting into getting Tampa and getting Oakland determined whether they stay, not stay. He's always trying to keep franchises where they are because of the risk of lawsuit when you leave. We saw that with St. Louis. I understand baseball has different antitrust exemptions than other sports, but St. Louis would scare the bejesus out of other leagues about moving because of what the city recovered in damages, and they end up paying that. So you try to avoid that at all costs. The second thing is the issues that you're having in Oakland and Tampa are around what? A stadium. What do you have in Baltimore? You have the jewel of stadiums. So there isn't anybody that I've ever talked to in the last two decades in baseball that thinks there's any reason to even remotely consider moving the Orioles franchise out. Now, on the other hand, look, yes, a lot of things can happen or not happen. And again, that's the risk that you take, which is you have a patriarch or now a matriarch in the family. When they pass on, it just, like I said, it complicates matters. And you'd like to be in a position to take care of the situation before you get into estate sales and trustees and numerous other things to do it. Having said that, given what's ahead for franchises, you have to have, and I think we know this now from when Peter was in a position to manage his own finances, that's when the payroll was supplemented. If you look at that mid 2012 to 2016 run, that the dollars weren't as like the same amount of dollars were there. They were drawing more people for sure, but it wasn't like there was a lot more corporate sponsorship or anything else. When the payroll got to $160 or $180 million, that money came from somewhere, right? It wasn't just what the team could earn in their own operating income. So I suspect that that has a lot to do with it. Looking forward, where will you get that from? Where will you get that ability to make contributions? Because your media dollars are now going to change. If the Masson deal gets dissolved the way that it looks like it will, that money's not there anymore for the franchise to look into, to make loans against or different things. So it's going to be a completely different world. And operating a team, say like in Tampa, out of just the operating income of the team and a little bit of media money, it's really difficult to do, which is why Tampa and Oakland are operating the way they are. Pittsburgh, why they're operating the way they are, can't spend on free agency, can't do those kind of things. And you've got to do things really well, and you got to have some luck, and you also got to be playing in a division. One of the things about the parallel between Baltimore and Houston of a rebuild, which I know a lot of people like to make, Houston was not rebuilding facing the number one and two media markets in the country, and Toronto and Tampa and all that. They were competing in a division where they were playing, you know, Seattle and Oakland and the Texas Rangers and all that. So it's much more difficult to do a rebuild in the American League East probably than any other division in baseball. So that's what you're faced with. And that takes a lot of money to overcome, not just farm system money, but free agency money, and really going out and generating corporate support like it used to happen in this town when things were operating in different ways.
Well, I mean, they had a concert last week with Flo Rida. They had Paul McCartney down there. They're doing some things. What was obvious from the 44 pages is the brothers having different opinions as to whether mom wanted to sell the team, Lou wants out, John wants in. You know, all that there is certainly incompetence, but more than that, just not even alignment. And I don't know where Major League Baseball has always stayed out of this, right? Like and this latest fiasco is not the Dennis Colazzo said this last week when I was on his show. He says it's an Indian proverb. I have to look it up to get it right. But when elephants collide, the grass suffers.
Right. When elephants fight, the grass dies. Yes.
Right. Exactly. And we're the grass here. Right. So, and this has been what the fans have dealt with, which is this muddled ownership and this not front-facing group of people and bad baseball. And, you know, every time I have Luke on, well, we're going to win. They're going to win. When they win, they win. Okay, great. When you win, you still have to have a plan to sell something. And that's the part where I do it is shown behind the scenes that it's as screwed up as I ever said it was. And so for that, great. I've been a decent reporter, but it's still not good, and it's probably about to get worse.
It's hard enough to win and have a competitive franchise in any sport when ownership is aligned. I know for a fact it's difficult. When there's not an alignment in the owner suite, in the family, whatever it is, it just makes it that much more difficult because there's questions around long-term planning, around financing for long-term planning, other elements, because all these things take partnerships. And if you're coming in to make a relationship with a team, any team, Baltimore or any place else, and there's some question in your mind about, well, who am I dealing with? Is this long-term solution? You tend to go in short-term increments, whether that's in a stadium lease or something else. There's just rightfully questions about that. There's a history to that when organizations have been in challenged positions, ownership-wise, the partnerships all around city, state, all those things. There are questions about, well, you know, why should we do this now and not later when we know what the long-term position will be? So it's difficult enough to win and be competitive when you have alignment, and it's so much more difficult when you don't. It's hard to draw people. It's, you know, people will come to a situation where they sense stability, and where they sense instability, there's questions. There were questions about the GM position back in 2018. People that I know who were questioned about, who were asked about it, said, yeah, I'm not sure until I knew more about the position of the ownership group to know whether I should be interested in that role or not. So that's the way it happened.
Well, Marty Conway's here. He is the good professor of all things down at Georgetown University, sport and business. And you can follow him out on Twitter as well as LinkedIn. A longer stay. It's not every week we're going to lose the World Cup, right? And certainly it's not every the same week that the two brothers of the franchise that you helped, you know, birth here 40 years ago in its modern state would be fighting over billions of dollars. So we haven't even gotten to Lamar Jackson's contract, Marty, and we all know that's the biggest story. So, hey, dude, towel off, rest up, referee, and enjoy the summer a little bit. I will certainly be getting back. Hopefully we should go to an Ohtani game next week, dude, right? Come on.
Oh, are they in now already? Is that, did I miss that?
4th of July. Come on now.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Get your pocket schedule out, Marty. Yeah. Marty Conway, we can find him out on Twitter and out on LinkedIn. You can find me eating crab cakes all week long. I'll be with Mayor Brandon Scott at Next Phase Cafe. Really looking forward to that chat. On Wednesday, I'll be at Fadley's in Lexington Market as well. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Got new scratch-offs to give away. We're running out of the Betty Boops. We're going to have new ones. And also our friends at Goodwill Industries. We got Lisa and Jonathan coming on this week, as well as our friends at Window Nation. I'm wearing my Window Nation Pride Month gig here. Buy two, get two free. That's the deal at Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking as the franchises spin and the World Cup goes. And Lamar Jackson, stay with us.